Thanks for joining Sap Alone Nerds, a coastal science podcast. I'm your host, Corinne.
And I'm your host, Brittany. And we work at the National Estuarine Research Reserve, or NEAR, on Sapelo Island, a Georgia barrier island.
It's one of my favorite times of the year, Brittany.
You mean your favorite season is summer?
I mean, it could be a little cooler, but it's turtle hatching season.
That's right, it is. Diamondback terrapins have been crossing the causeways to our nearby St. Simons and Jekyll Island, and sea turtles have been crawling up on our beaches to lay nests. Those early eggs have been cooking for between 60 to 70 days now, and the babies are hatching.
Diamondback terrapins are pretty adorable and unique. I mean, I've had guests say that their skin pattern looks like the flesh of dragon fruit, and that's kind of true. Plus, their permanent smiles make them so photogenic. But today, we're going to focus on Georgia sea turtles. So 2022 was a record-breaking year for sea turtle nests in Georgia.
Yeah, that's right. Georgia Barrier Islands had 4,089 nests last year. That beats the 2019 record of 3,956 nests. You can find a lot of information about sea turtle nesting at seaturtle.org, which we'll link in our show notes. The majority of nests in Georgia are from loggerhead sea turtles.
Yeah, and although five of the seven sea turtle species of the world will spend time in Georgia's coastal waters, the primary nesting turtle is the loggerhead sea turtle, or Caretta caretta. We usually get a few green sea turtle nests as well, but they are much less common, with only about 9 confirmed green sea turtle nests in 2022.
So we know loggerheads and sometimes greens will lay nests on our beaches, but what other sea turtles visit in Georgia?
You know what? Let's have our guest host, Robin Leskey, our summer science communication intern, answer.
Hi, everyone. The other sea turtles in Georgia are the Kemp's Ridley, Hawksbill, and Leatherback. These sea turtles have been around for about 110 million years and have done a pretty good job of finding their own favorite foods during that time. Loggerheads like especially crunchy foods like whelks. Green sea turtles are herbivores, so they eat plants. Kemp's Ridley love to eat crabs, hawksbills eat sponges, and leatherbacks love jellyfish.
And they can find all of this to eat in Georgia's waters. That means we have a pretty healthy habitat.
Sea turtles are a great example of charismatic megafauna. We can tell if the habitat is doing well or poorly by the presence or absence of megafauna that use a lot of habitat and have a lot of different needs.
So we know all of these turtle species, including the largest species in the world, the leatherback, visit Georgia's waters. But I've been wondering, why don't other sea turtles lay nests in Georgia?
That's a great question, Robin. For sea turtles to successfully nest, they have very particular habitat requirements. This includes temperature and moisture in the nest. You see, sea turtles don't have a hard shell like bird eggs. They are flexible and kind of leathery. This makes them much more sensitive to the environment around the egg. Each species has their own specific habitat needs, but once a species finds their preferred area or niche space, they tend to keep nesting there.
And that has a lot to do with what we call natal homing. This means that sea turtles return to where they hatched to lay their own eggs. A loggerhead may travel almost 8,000 miles from their feeding grounds back to where they hatched so they can mate and lay their own eggs.
While most sea turtles nest individually, the Kemps and Olive Ridleys have a really unique and fascinating nesting behavior called an arribada, or arrival in Spanish.
You mean an arribada?
Arribada, that's what I said.
Yeah. Close.
Female Ridleys will gather together in the water and come onto the beaches by thousands to nest at the same time. It's likely this behavior is a survival tactic because predators and other factors are big risks for baby sea turtles.
I've heard that of the nearly 410,000 eggs laid on Georgia's beaches this year, only 1 per 1,000 or 10,000 of those eggs will make it to adulthood. Sea turtles face many risks, especially as hatchlings that look like tasty meals for birds, crabs, and fish. Even before they hatch, sea turtles are at risk from predators like coyotes, foxes, hogs, and raccoons.
Concern over nest predators is just one of the reasons that there are extensive nest monitoring programs for sea turtles. If you visit one of Georgia's barrier islands between May and October, then you'll likely find sea turtle nests marked on the beach. Nests are usually covered with a large plastic and wire netting to prevent predators from digging down into the nest. The nests are also marked with a post with information such as the species of turtle and the date it was laid.
Most of the posts will have two letter C's next to each other for Caretta caretta, or the loggerhead. But you may be lucky to find a CM for Chelonia mitis, the green sea turtle. But please don't get too close to the nest. We want to make sure that those babies stay undisturbed.
And since we've made it into hatching season, just a reminder that it is illegal to disturb hatchlings. If you happen to notice any making their way to the water, just stand off to the side and maybe try to fend off any predators you see without touching any hatchling.
So that brings us to our next segment.
Hey, stop doing that, Nubian jerk!
Where we talk about things that you're probably doing accidentally that can really impact wildlife.
Turn off your lights at night, pal.
Stop littering, buddy.
Keep your dogs on a leash, chief.
Stop speeding in your speedboat, sir.
Don't go in the dunes, dude.
Crush those sandcastles and fill in those moats, my guy.
And now back to our regularly scheduled programming.
To tell us more about sea turtle hatching season, we brought in Sapelo's sea turtle technician for the year, Matthew Goetz. Thanks for joining us today, Matt.
Thank you both for having me.
So Matt, what first drew you to doing sea turtle research?
Well, I've always had an interest in reptiles and amphibians, and since I graduated with my bachelor's degree in 2019 in biology, I've been lucky enough to work a few positions in wildlife research and management. I got started out with an internship in New Mexico working with Mojave and prairie rattlesnakes, and since then I've worked with a few other imperiled species of snakes and turtles. But sea turtles are really unique in terms of their life history and biology, so I really wanted to diversify my resume and gain some new experience and kind of get my foot in the door in the realm of sea turtles and field biology. I'm also interested in coastal ecosystems because they're so dynamic, and also sea turtles are so charismatic that it's such a pleasure to work with them.
Oh, I totally agree. I've really enjoyed getting to work with sea turtles, too, in my time working on the coast. So how has it been living and working on Sapelo this season?
It's been such a privilege to live on Sapelo Island. I've met so many kind people and had so many beautiful moments in nature. I would say one of my favorite things about my job is getting out onto the beach at dawn and watching the sunrise and maybe a couple of roseate spoonbills fly overhead, and it's just really great.
And monitoring the nests on Sapelo is a little different from other islands. Can you explain the research going on with Sapelo's nest?
Sapelo Island is unique because we're trying to answer questions about the effects of common management practices on sea turtle nests. So two common management practices are applying predator screens and relocating nests. In my case, predator screens are large 4x4 plastic mesh screens that we stake down on top of nests to keep raccoons and coyotes from eating our eggs. Relocations are commonly done when a nest is at risk of inundation from tidal activity, meaning water accumulates in the nest and kills the eggs. So we're curious to see how these two management practices affect hatch success, how many eggs hatch, and emergence success, so how many hatchlings are able to escape the egg chamber. So we apply different treatments to each nest randomly on the island. We have a control where we don't apply any management to the nest. Then we screen some, we relocate some, and for some we do both. So looking at a couple years of data that was published in a paper in 2015, we think that predator screens don't affect nest success and are actually really effective. For nests that are not lost to inundation, it seems that relocations do have a slightly negative effect on hatch and emergence success.
So Matt, since you're the most up-to-date on Sapelo's nests, how are we looking this year? Any hatches?
So I have some really exciting news. As of today, we're at 238 nests, which is an all-time record for Sapelo Island. And starting July 21st, we've started to get some hatchouts, and it's really starting to heat up out there on the beach.
That's so exciting! So we mentioned that last year was a record-breaking year for the Georgia coast. So since we're having record numbers on Sapelo, should we expect another record year for Georgia overall?
Well, you might think so, but actually, that's not necessarily the case. If you look at loggerhead nesting activity over a few years, there's peaks and valleys in total nest numbers. Loggerhead females typically take at least one gap year between nesting seasons. Usually, it's about 2 to 3 years apart. It takes a lot of energy to fuel egg development, so they need to eat a lot, and they need some time to recover before they're ready to nest again.
That makes sense. It's a lot of work laying multiple nests in a season. Those ladies need a break. So some nests are already hatching, and some females are still nesting. When is sea turtle season normally over?
You know, you commonly hear that sea turtle nesting season runs from mid-October, but usually we start to see a decline in nests around the third week of July, and then it really starts to drop off by the fourth week of July into August. The last expected hatches are usually sometime in early October.
I love to see those little hatchlings scurry down into the water, but they usually hatch way past my bedtime in the middle of the night. But if I do manage to stay up late exploring the beach, should I use a flashlight to find hatchlings or nesting sea turtles, Matt?
Hard no, but I'm really glad you asked. Regular flashlights will startle nesting females and cause what we call a false crawl, where she doesn't nest after coming up onto the beach. When they emerge at night, hatchlings use moonlight as an aid to orient themselves towards the ocean, and artificial lighting can cause them to misorient and become lost. So what you want to do is use a red light flashlight, because humans can see red light much better than sea turtles can. Just remember not to get too close.
Good to know. Let's definitely not distract those turtles. So thank you so much for joining us today, Matt. It was really great to chat with you.
It was great to be here. This was a lot of fun.
Now it's time for another shell-arious joke.
Exactly. Thanks for joining in on the fun, Robin. So what do you get when you cross a turtle with a porcupine?
I have no idea.
A slow poke.
Oh, my goodness.
I got one. What kind of photos do self-centered turtles take?
I don't know. Tell us.
Shelfies.
Why is turtle wax so expensive?
Why?
You can't get much wax out of those tiny ears.
Oh, man. This reminds me of the time my friend and I went to a turtle pun class. It taught us nothing.
For more information about any of the topics we covered today, or to submit your question that may be featured in our upcoming episodes, please email us at signer.socials@gmail.com. That's signer.socials@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening to Sapelo Nerds, a coastal science podcast brought to you by the Sapelo Island National Estuarine Research Reserve. Please check back for more episodes released on the 1st and the 15th of each month.
And that's the Sapelo Sound.